Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. And quarterbacking the show. Oh, I should have used that word.
Irresistible.
No, so, all right. Ryan Thomas is there at the controls and Grace Reif on the phones. And we want to encourage you. I think you'll want to jump in on the phones here soon today as we get into our conversation, because we'll be talking about issues of religious freedom, which is becoming much more important by the day, it seems. But just quickly before we get into that and I introduce our guests, I want to just mention again that we still have some time left for you to enter your pastor in our Pastor Appreciation Month opportunity. It's a week-long free getaway to your pastor and spouse, and all you need to do is just sign them up. So there's details online, myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com, and check that out and be a part of encouraging your pastor and let us know why he should or she should be nominated. And if you are a pastor, of course, you can sign up yourself as well and look forward to maybe a week away in the mountains of Colorado. Sounds good. Looking forward to spending some time today talking about issues of religious freedom. There's a seminar coming up for folks in the Minneapolis area or willing to drive to St. Paul. There's a one-day seminar coming up this Thursday. The focus is to empower people of faith to work and live according to their deeply held religious beliefs. And we're going to talk about issues of religious freedom. It's a religious freedom forum. One of the keynote speakers will be our guest today, who is on the line with us. Joe Infranco is a senior legal counsel and vice president of Alliance Defending Freedom. And he has more than 30-plus years of legal experience advancing religious freedom issues. Has counseled a number of churches and ministries and nonprofits in the New York area, including Teen Challenge, Youth for Christ, Youth with a Mission, and the New York American Family Association. And he's successfully litigated a number of cases on religious liberty issues and testified in these topics before Congress and the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and state legislatures. And he has been with the ADF for the past 10 years or so, worked on hundreds of important cases regarding access to freedom of religion and exercise of religion. And before that, he was for 25 years in a New York law firm, and we could spend a lot of time talking about Joe's background, but we get the point that he knows of what he speaks. And Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, is a servant ministry building an alliance to keep the door open for the spread of the gospel by transforming the legal system and advocating for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage and family. And they've been underway for the past almost 20 years. And Joe, by way of welcome, let me just welcome you to the program. And tell me a little bit about, you've been there 10 years. ADF has been in operation for about 20 years. I'm interested to know how cases that you've represented or represent now are different today than maybe a decade ago, and what does that indicate?
Sure. Well, hi, Neil. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks.
Yeah, you know, that's a fascinating question. You watch the cases change, and I would say in a general way, the cases reflect the culture. One thing that strikes me is we can see from the cases how it is that the church is viewed less favorably in the culture generally. You know, I remember when I started, going back 35 years ago, you had some goodwill with churches. There was a kind of a belief in the culture that churches were good for society, that these moral issues were important. And even if people didn't necessarily live morally, they at least recognized that as an ideal that they were missing. And the way I would describe it is I think today, as the culture more and more pursues sort of relativism, the loss of absolute truth, as we see that happening, with that, there seems to be more of a belief that churches, rather than being a blessing and a good for communities, or something like they're leeches on the tax rolls. They're occasionally you'll hear they're bigoted because they have these views of absolute truth. They believe that there are types of behaviors that are actually right or wrong, and who are we to judge those things? So there's been a general diminution, and there's also there's far less respect and understanding of the importance of religious liberty and how that protects us all in the culture.
It does seem that, you know, while churches are experiencing this, that it's happening in sort of in public places and workplaces as well, right? I know that's one of the things you'll be talking about here this week, but that businesses have suddenly been under the careful watch of those that are not in favor of religious freedom.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, for example, you know, we have been litigating quite a few of these HHS mandate cases, and what that involves is the regulations for the Affordable Health Care Act, which also known as Obamacare, require that businesses provide certain types of coverage, and these include potentially abortifacient drugs. And so there have been quite a few businesses that have said, look, we provide generous health insurance. These things may be available in the market. It violates our conscience to pay and provide for these. And initially, by the way, the first set of regulations even required religious nonprofits to provide these. And, the federal government has essentially taken the view, well, look, we don't care if you have religious convictions against these things. This is the new government orthodoxy. We want you providing, you know, these benefits. And so we've been litigating this. In fact, we've had 12 cases go now with results. We're 11-1. So, hopefully we're winning these cases. And I think the overall count on these is 31 wins and 5 losses. But another example, we've represented nurses a few times who are quite literally compelled to take part in abortion procedures, who were told, if you do not do so, you will lose your job. And the idea is that, you know, if you have some sort of religious or moral objection, keep it to yourself. And there's a continuing devaluation, in those religious convictions.
It does seem like there is a sense of, well, you can have freedom to worship. You can carry on your convictions at home, but any place public or, outside of the home, then you're subject to government scrutiny.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely right. And in fact, it's interesting that the term freedom to worship is sort of working its way into the public vocabulary. It's replacing religious freedom. And I don't think that that's by accident. You know, the freedom to worship, but what does that mean? Well, okay, stay in the four walls of your church and do your crazy stuff there and believe what you want. But if you come out of the church, we're going to impose certain conditions on you. And one of the places this is exploding, for example, we represented a photographer in New Mexico, Elaine Photography. And this young woman was asked to film a same-sex commitment ceremony, to be the photographer for it, rather. She declined, and she would have provided services for these women. She didn't care about that, but she didn't want to be a part of a same-sex commitment ceremony, which violated her beliefs. She didn't want to be a part of posing the romantic pictures and all these things. And when she turned down, she was sued. They filed a complaint against her in the State Human Rights Commission that investigates discrimination on the basis of issues like sexual orientation, and sometimes they even have gender identity. And she was fined some thousands of dollars, and this finding was upheld by the New Mexico Supreme Court. We're going to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to look at it, but we're seeing this now with all sorts of wedding businesses, florists, bakers. We're seeing it with bed and breakfast places. There are people who own, in their own home, they maybe rent a few rooms. There are individuals who have said, we'll rent rooms to married couples or single individuals, not to cohabiting non-married persons, because it violates our personal moral beliefs. Well, they're now being told, no, you're violating the anti-discrimination laws. You must do this or close down your home. And this is the frightening thing, Neil. It's becoming the wrong answer. If you have some sort of traditional religious moral view, it's the wrong answer, and we're going to stop it or silence it.
Is the issue that's most often brought up anti-discrimination, or is that the charge that's generally leveled, or it's a civil rights thing? So it's not necessarily a religious issue, right? They couch it in some other way.
That's right. It gets brought up as you're engaging in discrimination. And I'd say this is interesting because religious beliefs are protected among anti-discrimination laws. You're not supposed to discriminate against somebody because of their religious beliefs. It's protected in the First Amendment. It's protected in every state constitution I've ever seen. And yet that protection is being sacrificed to now, politically correct ideals. And very often it has to do with the redefinition of marriage. And I'm not here to single out particular issues, but we notice the direction from which threats come. And the redefinition of marriage is a big one, because simply affirming a belief, marriage is one man and one woman because you have biblical beliefs, to that effect, simply affirming that now makes you some sort of a hateful person. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, 10 years ago, this was not the case. And, when these trends come, they come so quickly. And this is a thing that's particularly disturbing. It's been portrayed to the public as a sort of live and let live. Let's let people, have intimate relationships and we'll all leave each other alone. That's never what happens. The so-called tolerance is the most extraordinarily intolerant kind of view you'll ever see. I mean, just one other quick example. In the military, when "don't ask, don't tell" was revoked, the messaging we heard was, well, okay, now everybody can serve in the military. What happened shortly thereafter is chaplains that we represent were contacted by the military, and they were told things like, look, if you believe in this sort of old-fashioned theology, or you're associated with one of these churches that thinks that, sex is a relationship between only one man and one woman in marriage, well, maybe it's time you rethink whether you should be a chaplain in the military. We're seeing subtle pressure. Occasionally we're seeing direct pressure. Well, the greater Christian orthodoxy, little o, believes that marriage is precisely that, one man and one woman. So it's not live and let live. It's you are now the wrong answer, and we're going to increasingly push you off the stage.
Getting some perspective today on some of the issues before us as a nation, and certainly as believers. How do we live out our faith in public? We're talking about it today. My guest is Joe Infranco. He's a senior legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. And he'll be one of the keynotes at a Minnesota Religious Freedom Forum coming up on Thursday, the 24th, at the St. Paul River Center for those in the Twin Cities area or willing to drive a bit. It'll be a great opportunity to get some practical help. In fact, it's an all-day seminar sponsored by the Minnesota Family Council and the Alliance Defending Freedom, Transform Minnesota, the Minnesota Catholic Conference. We'll give details about that in a moment. Would like to invite you to join the conversation. Maybe you've had some experiences, perhaps at work, in a situation, or maybe your spouse or your children have faced some challenges to their beliefs. Love to have you join the conversation and get some perspective from Joe today. You can call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484, or online's myfaithradio.com. Then click on Connecting Faith. There's an email link there, and we'll talk more with Joe and Franco in just a moment.
Divorce is hard no matter what age you are, and I was in my 40s when my parents' marriage ended after 44 years, and I guess I'm still in process of accepting it is what it is. I love my parents, so I want to show them this by treating them with kindness and not blame. Life is about choices, and sometimes the hurt lingers longer than I want and the tears still come, but it's my choice to think on what is right and good and worthy of being thankful for, and not the opposite of Philippians 4:8. I hate that mom and dad are divorced, but I can look at all the positive ways they've poured into my life as a couple and as individuals. Through this season, I saw things I needed to change, and I'm the only one who can do that with God's help. Not everything my children need me to be, and I make mistakes. And most days, my prayer is, God, have mercy. My flesh and will is strong, but the Spirit who lives in me will lead me is stronger every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
It's 19 past the hour. Happy to have on the line today Joe Infranco, Senior Legal Counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Got some 35 years of legal experience. Spent some time in New York and in arguing important First Amendment cases, such as Lamb's Chapel. I remember that one back a number of years ago. It had to do with the churches had the right to rent public schools for events. That sort of popped up again. And we're talking about issues like Hobby Lobby and a number of things today with Joe. There's a religious freedom forum coming up in a couple of days, and Joe will be one of the keynote speakers for that. I did want to ask you, Joe, is there a, are there some reasonable limits that we should come to expect in a diverse culture? I mean, obviously we want to be free to express our beliefs, but I mean, I think we recognize that, you know, someone's freedom is another one's, you know, license. So there needs to be some restraints, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we're never opposed to those things. It's interesting, in the media portrayals, there seems to be this effort to say that, you know, Christians are some sort of majority authoritarian view imposing their will on people. And it really, in practice, it's quite the opposite. I mean, for example, we've represented probably more than 100 Christian clubs or individuals in public universities. And the rule in public universities is that, you know, sort of the one club that gets singled out for disfavored treatment is something like a Christian club or some club that, you know, has some sort of biblical values. They are routinely singled out. You know, they won't be given rooms. They won't be recognized. They can't get the same budget as other people. But there are certainly reasonable limits. And I think one thing that's missing is a sort of civility. We always try to bring civility to the discussion. I think it's important that we be respectful of people, and we understand that people have different views. And as much as possible, we do try to accommodate each other, trying to convince people arguments about faith at the point of a sword or a gun or something like that is obviously not the optimal way to win hearts. But yeah, there are those limits. It's sometimes a difficult line to draw. But my concern is what's happening, though, is in practice, what should be a line of accommodation is increasingly pushing against the church and people of faith. And the accommodation is increasingly you give up your beliefs and your expression and your right to object to things and make way for government as the highest good. I mean, for example, we have, let's say, public school issues. Sometimes as children as young as kindergarten, first grade, there's curriculum I've seen that makes me blush. There are children very young being told this is normative sexual behavior. This is the meaning of marriage. And when parents simply say, look, they don't say stop teaching that. They simply say, I'm going to opt my child out. I don't want my child having a condom demonstration or something like that. They're actually told by schools, no, you have no right to opt out. You have no right to know when these things will happen. We're going to teach your children what we think is important. You know, we can't trust you parents to explain the facts of life or whatever it is we think is important. So increasingly, it's working the other way.
Is that one of the issues, is that we don't know our rights? Or is, I guess I was wondering, before that, are these lines of accommodations getting pushed because those that oppose are finding success in the courts, or they're able to sort of use the bully pulpit or something of a public school or whatever?
Well, you know, when we push back, we're often successful. By God's grace, we've been successful in about 80% of our cases. And I've seen thousands of cases over the years that I've been here. There's hundreds going on at any given time. I think a part of it is we don't know our rights. I think another part of it is we put up with the other side's description of things. For example, In November, one of our cases accepted before the Supreme Court, a case called Town of Greece versus Galloway, is on the rights of prayer before a legislative event, you know, invocations. This is a tradition that goes back to our Continental Congress. There's no question, this is an unbroken tradition of this for centuries. And the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Marsh v. Chambers that it's permissible, it's constitutional. And yet we have a number of cases where federal courts of appeal have said, well, we really don't think you should be praying, or if you do, they've got to be non-sectarian prayers. We had a court, you know, strike down out of a policy out of North Carolina because they said, well, when you invite ministers from the community, even though it's their prayer, too many of them mention Jesus or have this some sort of distinctly Christian prayer, and you can't do that. Well, I mean, what would, does that mean? Government's in the business of censoring prayers? So if we invite a rabbi, we have to tell him, don't make a reference to the God of, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, so there, what used to be an accommodation to religion, because we recognize these religious values were important, is now becoming more of a hostility. But the happy thing is when people get informed and speak up, we win these cases. And actually, we have a very good feeling about this case going to the Supreme Court. We think the Federal Appeals Court out of New York issued just a very difficult to understand decision. And we're looking forward to those arguments.
I'm going to talk more about that in a moment. I want to take a call here before our bottom of the hour break. Angela is calling with a question. Angela, you're on with Joe and Franco from ADF. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me on. This is perfect timing, actually. I'm starting a photography business, and I'm against homosexual marriage, and I would like to do weddings, but I'm kind of using that as a deterrent because I don't want to have to be put in an awkward situation. But I was wondering also regarding that, how does the organization view that in comparison to taking photos of maybe a child born out of wedlock? Just kind of wondering the views there, and if you have any tips or tricks on how I can kind of navigate this.
Yeah, and let me say, we have resources on our website. If you go on alliancedefendingfreedom.org, there's a link to resources, or as well, people can contact us. We are a ministry, we're a nonprofit, everything we do is free. If you need individual legal advice, anyone is free to contact us either on the website, or you can call 1-800-TELL-ADF. And we're happy to give advice. This is coming up all over the country. Some photographers have said, I will leave the wedding business because if I don't, and there's some legal authority that if you don't do any weddings, you don't have to do same-sex weddings. But there are other ways people have dealt with it. We've not given up on it. And Minnesota, if you are in Minnesota, actually has some pretty strong free exercise of religion protections under your state constitution, the way your high court has interpreted it. And as we're going to go into some of this in the conference, but you know, you can set up your business with a sort of a religious philosophy, and corporations even have, have philosophies. Think of Starbucks or, you know, Ben and Jerry's ice cream. You can do that. But the other thing that's important is we think when a photographer is forced to do that, that there's something like compelled speech. You're being forced to adopt a message with which you don't agree. And the First Amendment protects against compelled speech. So although Elaine lost in New Mexico, that doesn't mean that would be the outcome in every state. Nor does it mean that, you know, Elaine, that decision will stand. It could be the Supreme Court will step in. We're asking them to do that. So it's far from over, but it's a cutting-edge case. Mm. We have had other people, other businesses, take this approach. They've simply said, look, I am required by law, perhaps, to take pictures of your wedding, but I want you to know I disapprove of the ceremony. And if I make money from your ceremony, I'm going to turn around and donate it to an organization that fights against same-sex marriage. Now, you would think ordinarily that would, you know, be a tip to the person to say, yeah, maybe I don't want your services. And it's interesting, they only compel religious persons to do this. You know, when we have asked in the court decision, in the court arguments, would you compel an African-American photographer to film a KKK event? Or would you compel a homosexual photographer to film a church rally on keeping marriage one man and one woman? Well, they always say, well, no, you can't make them do that. Well, why would you compel somebody who has moral beliefs the other way? And see, again, this is a one-way game. So there are things you can do. Feel free to contact us for more specific advice. I can't give so much particularized legal advice, and I'm not even sure you're from Wisconsin or something.
I think she's from St. Paul, but yeah, and we can certainly mention, Joe, the Minnesota Religious Freedom Forum for those in the area. It'll be at St. Paul's coming up Thursday, the 24th. And if you go to mnreligiousfreedom.org, you can find out registration information, mnreligiousfreedom.org.
And if I may just add very quickly, there's a place there for churches, for religious nonprofits, and businesses.
Good.
We will be addressing the needs of all and how to conduct yourself today.
Good. We'll talk more here with Joe and Franco in just a moment. Senior legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. You can check out their resources, alliancedefendingfreedom.org. More with Joe in a moment. Welcome your calls, too, at 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and today we're talking about religious freedom and free expression of religion, of our beliefs and convictions. Talking today with Joe and Franco, who is the senior legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. They're a ministry organization about 20 years strong that helped to keep the door open for the spread of the gospel by transforming the legal system and advocating for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage and family. Joe has a long background in legal affairs as an attorney. And Joe, I'm thinking that, you know, in all your books in your library and all the study, that the law is sort of based on logic, isn't it? I mean, it just, you know, some of the illustrations you're sharing is just like, well, that doesn't even make, that's just not even logical anymore. I mean, has logic sort of taken a back seat?
You know, occasionally there are issues, and often the law works well, and often, you know, if you heard something and you said, gee, that doesn't seem fair, often the law tracks that. But there are sometimes areas where something becomes so politically correct and radioactive that everything around it gets distorted. We noticed this years ago with the subject of abortion. We used to call it the abortion distortion. The ordinary First Amendment rules that apply to speaking on sidewalks suddenly didn't apply if the subject was abortion. And that is happening now to some extent with same-sex marriage. So sometimes you see kind of logic, it just sort of bends. I mean, for example, I remember reading a decision out of the Iowa Supreme Court on same-sex marriage, and my jaw nearly dropped to the floor. You know, a number of state Supreme Courts had said, well, the government has an interest in defining marriage because marriage is about procreation. Marriage has always been about the concept that we want to unite children with their biological fathers and mothers because they tend to do better. It's not a terribly difficult concept to grasp. That's why government has been sort of in the marriage business. And I remember the Iowa Supreme Court saying, well, same-sex couples can procreate too. And I thought, well, they don't have a dictionary in the Iowa Supreme Court. By definition, they can't. It involves a third party. And I'm not saying this to get into the merits or disparage anybody, just to say sometimes you see statements and they're astonishing, or the rules that should apply. Now, and some of these things, you know, in time they get corrected. Like the Supreme Court will be hearing soon arguments in a Massachusetts law that posed this very strict, this draconian restriction against anybody outside an abortion clinic, went out to 35 feet. And it has really no precedent in First Amendment law. And the Supreme Court agreed to take the case. And the thinking is they're going to correct this and make the same rules apply to everybody. But you do get these areas that are sometimes so politically charged and so politically correct that it just seems to distort any issue that comes near it.
Is it, wouldn't it be better, I guess, for us as a society if we could address these issues maybe legislatively. I mean, there is a concern that if everything goes to the courts, I mean, that we've sort of lost, we're subject to the political views or the whims of a handful of people.
Yeah, and that is something that's been discussed everywhere. You know, the vision of the founders of this nation was that the judiciary was supposed to be the weakest branch, and you made your case in democracy. It's no secret that, you know, the opposition to us in many of these issues looks to find the most liberal judiciary. You know, when the marriage case was brought in California, the other side went to San Francisco, drew a judge who himself was in a same-sex relationship, you know, which he did not disclose. And ordinarily, if you have a personal interest, it's something you should at least advise the parties, you know, so there's some discussion whether you're going to be neutral. And the decision went about the way we would have expected. It's called forum shopping. You can go somewhere, you know. So, there's not really an independent – we're naive if we think that judges and their political leanings don't have a strong outcome in the case. Check how many 5-4 decisions there have been in the Supreme Court in the last few years.
True enough. Joe, are you always on the defensive? I mean, are there some ways that that you or we can be proactive against some of these limits to religious freedom?
Oh yeah, you know, we're great believers in being active. We file cases that are important, but we've looked for campaigns. I mean, for example, we have proactively gone after Planned Parenthood. We have a number of cases where we have found insiders at Planned Parenthood who have made allegations which are potentially fraudulent, and we have filed claims called QI-TAM actions. Help support good legislation, and we work with many policy organizations and help them in enacting good laws. We, for example, have looked to hold abortion clinics to the same medical standards that other clinics are held to. And it's interesting how they resist this. Anything that affects their bottom line, they don't want to do. And by simply passing laws, for example, that require them to have the same health standards that any other clinic would have, we've seen quite a few abortion clinics closing down. I saw a count not too long ago of 30 abortion clinics closing down simply because they're held to higher standards and actually informing the patients about the consequences of abortion, not only the physical consequences, but the psychological consequences. We've had pro-life students in high schools and colleges. We have programs to train law students and to train college students to give them Christian worldview training to know how to answer these questions when the subjects come up in their public universities, to be able to engage in the debate and win hearts and minds. Yeah, you know, across the board, we are looking to proactively engage these issues. And when we find government is doing something indefensible, what we like to do as well is simply get the story out in public. I mean, there was a case in Minnesota, and it was handled by one of our allied attorneys and with local people. It was a very compelling story. There was a gentleman who escaped from Vietnam. He was in the war there. His family fled, came to this country. They believed in religious freedom. And he bought a house on a bluff with a river, and to thank God for the deliverance of his family, he put up a statue of Jesus in his backyard. And the city came after him and said, well, you can't do that. It's too close to the line, and we think it's too large. And there was kind of arbitrary rules. When they didn't apply those, if you put up a gazebo that was that distance or something like that, well, that's a very compelling story. Somebody who came to this country was so incredibly grateful to escape the you know, what probably would have been a death sentence from when the North Vietnam essentially took over South Vietnam. It came here for this religious freedom and loves this country. And here, you know, he's involved with sort of this kind of petty bureaucratic thinking that we don't want you putting this statue in your backyard. And when that story came to light, the city back down. And that often happens. You know, when these things come into the light of public scrutiny, sometimes these sort of boneheaded bureaucratic tendencies fall into line.
There's a news clip, audio clip right there. Anyway, Joe Infranco is my guest today. I want to talk a little bit more about those issues. By the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, maybe you have a circumstance or situation or something you're wondering about, perhaps as a business person coming up at the Religious Freedom Forum, we'll be talking about conducting your faith-based business according to your beliefs and rights and responsibilities of house of worship or church, or can you express your faith in public as a child or an adult, some of those things. And you may have some questions about that. You're welcome to join our conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. And Joe Infranco's my guest from Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, has been around for a long time doing great work. Joe, it does seem like the government used to be kind of a friend of the court for a number of these cases. Does the government sort of see the inconsistencies? I mean, even maybe the health care mandate, some of those things, it just, you know, it seems like one department's working against the other.
Yeah, and, you know, the government sort of zigs and zags. You know, the last administration, it was common that we got friend of the court briefs on certain religious freedom issues. The current administration, not as often. We get some pleasant surprises. The administration weighed in on our side in the legislative prayer case and issued a friend of the court brief saying that the practice should be upheld as it was upheld for the Nebraska legislature, you know, in the last Supreme Court decision on it. But there is some sort of government hostility at times. I saw a lot of it in New York. And again, it was not only the Lamb's Chapel decision, which went to the Supreme Court, but there was another decision, Good News Club out of New York, which also went to the Supreme Court. We've been litigating a case called Bronx Household of Faith for 16 years. We still have the city of New York under an injunction for not wanting to let churches have worship services there. But, I mean, in Bronx Household of Faith, just to give you an idea, here's the city of New York saying, and it was actually state law, saying on weekends, any community group can rent a church. They can come in and speak on any topic they want, pay the rent, and they leave, but the only group we can't have is a church. If a church comes in on a weekend, there's no students around, pays the same rent, that somehow could violate the Constitution. It always puzzled me. You know, did they think the religious words were going to seep into the walls and pounce on the kids when they returned to school on Monday, or what was going to happen? Well, this wasn't neutrality. This was hostility. And when Lamb's Chapel was argued in the Supreme Court, it was a 9-0 win. You know, the school district was asked questions like, well, could you have an atheist group renting the school on a weekend? Well, sure. Could you have a communist group? Yeah. How about an atheist group debating a minister? Well, not if you had a minister in there and he's saying religious things. There was this kind of absurd view. And one of the justices in the Supreme Court was so flummoxed by it. It was Justice Scalia. He said to the other lawyer, counselor, I'm from New York. We used to give churches tax-exempt status on the theory that they were good for the culture. Do you still do that in New York? Laughter in the courtroom. And then he pressed in for the kill. And he said, furthermore, when I was in New York, we used to think that if somebody was God-fearing, he might be less likely to mug me or rape my sister. So tell me, how's the new regime doing in New York? Glad to see you have it figured out. Well, there's a lot of laughter in the courtroom, but it was making the point. Because the state of New York actually said in a brief, the assistant attorney general in the case wrote something like this, it's reasonable to keep churches out because they don't benefit the community at large. They only benefit a narrow group of adherents who subscribe to their particular philosophy. That's a shocking piece of, you know, anti-religious bigotry. And it has seeped into much of what we deal with in government reactions.
Joe, I'm interested. You mentioned the New York case. I mean, it's been ongoing for years. I mean, the individuals, churches, and businesses. How can we afford to keep sort of pressing our case? I mean, think about Hobby Lobby. It's a multi-billion-dollar corporation, but they're in a major fight. I mean, that this costs an awful lot of money.
Well, they are, but they don't pay anything. As I said earlier, we're a ministry. Everything we've been doing is pro bono work. It's the only thing we couldn't charge if we want to, but we don't want to. It's a great blessing to us that we are able to do this work pro bono. Our allied attorneys around the country have actually done and reported so much pro bono work. The value of it at conservative fees, since we've been tracking it, is over $160 million worth of pro bono work for the body of Christ. But yeah, the New York case is interesting. It's ongoing. We won for Christian speech, and the court is still trying to hang on to a distinction that you can have religious speech, but if you actually worship, that somehow is different. It's a remarkable piece of litigation, and it's the longest running case I've been involved in my life, I'll say that.
Well, it's never shortage of reasons to give you kind of pause and raise your eyebrows, I suppose, when you read some of these things, isn't it? Amazing.
That's right. It really is. And I think when you realize we've gone from our history of accommodating religion and recognizing the value, the moral values that you know, mainstream religion brings to us as a society, when you realize that now religion is often viewed as some sort of toxin, we've got to scrub it out. I mean, one of the areas we're defending is, you know, we're going against groups like the ACLU and American Jewish for Separation all the time. We're working with the largest veterans organizations in the country, like the American Legion and the VFW, and they are outraged because these groups bring lawsuits where if a military memorial has a cross in it in some form, they say it's got to be removed because it's an effort to establish the Christian faith. They've brought lawsuits against students having to hear the Pledge of Allegiance because it contains the words "under God." Never mind, no student has to say it. This is the weird inverted world of some of these groups. They would say in a high school, if the high school wants to put a filter on their computers so that children don't accidentally or even intentionally for that matter access obscene materials, they would say that's a violation of the First Amendment. Those high school and junior high school students should be able to access that information with no restrictions because of the First Amendment. But then they would turn around and they would say the same First Amendment requires that you can't say the Pledge of Allegiance in those schools with the words "under God," because students hearing the words "under God" will, you know, could potentially be offended. And if somebody could be offended over that, we can't have it. This is the weird, inverted world of these people. And I tell you, if there weren't organizations, I thank God that he gave me the privilege to be a part of Alliance Defending Freedom, to leave private practice and do this full time. I thank God for every attorney out there who has a heart and a passion for these things. Because if we were not fighting back, they would be winning these lawsuits by default.
Good point. Joe Infranco is a senior legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. He's our guest today. We're talking about religious freedom, freedom of expression, some of those things as it relates to school and work and church. And we're going to talk more with Joe in just a moment. Do we have some time for another call or two? If you have a question or a specific area you'd like to reflect on as it relates to religious freedom concerns, and we'll tell you more about the Religious Freedom Forum coming up as well. The number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH.
This is Wayne Peterson, president of HCJB Global, with Beyond the Call.
Kofi's addiction to alcohol was destroying his life. In his drunkenness, he would often neglect his wife and children, leaving them to fend for themselves. Kofi's story is one of many of those living in Ghana. But Kofi found a way out. He found God over the radio. His children encouraged him to listen to the local Christian radio station. As he heard about God's message of hope, he found hope. He realized he needed to stop drinking and be a better father. Soon, the whole family was listening to the radio station together, enjoying the time they now got to spend with a loving father. Be a light to those dealing with addictions. Ask God how you can help. And go beyond the call. This is Wayne Peterson. What is God asking you to do today? Make it a day that you go beyond the call. and then visit us online at hcjb.org.
It's 50 past the hour. It's Connecting Faith. And today we're talking with Joe Infranco. He's a senior legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. He'll be one of the keynotes for the Minnesota Religious Freedom Forum. For those in the Twin Cities or greater Twin Cities area or willing to drive a little bit, it's coming up Thursday at the St. Paul River Center. You can get details about that at mnreligiousfreedom.org. mnreligiousfreedom.org. Joe will be talking about preserving our first freedom, navigating challenges, and overcoming threats to religious liberties, and the number of breakout sessions that have to do with how we can, people of faith, can work and live according to their deeply held religious beliefs. Joe has been with the Alliance Defending Freedom here for past 10 years or so and been in legal practice for about 35 or so. I'm interested that I know there's a saying about, you know, I think it was the mayor of Chicago talked about, you know, never miss a crisis to make some policy, but bad facts make bad law. Can you talk a little bit about that, Joe? Are there some examples?
Oh, yeah, that's so true. You know, judges are human, and we always remind ourselves of these. We're very careful in that. And look, every view is going to have a spectrum of beliefs, and there are the people who don't represent it well. And I think sometimes, for example, there's an effort to stereotype, Christian beliefs with, you know, groups like the Westboro Baptists. And I sometimes wonder if the Westboro Baptists are on the payroll of the other side, you know, if they show up at military memorials with signs that say God hates, you know, fill in the blank. And, it just seems as well that these groups sometimes get a really disproportionate amount of media attention. You know, they don't pay attention to what maybe Rick Warren is doing or something like that, or how much he's giving away, or, you know, a group like Westboro Baptist is it's basically almost like an extended family. It's not a terribly large church, but you get these things. You know, occasionally you get people, and you know, there might be religious theme beliefs, but they're sort of grounded in kind of inherently hateful messages. And we think it's very important because, you know, our view is that as Christians, we're supposed to be gracious. We're supposed to be polite. And I guess what? In Minnesota, you all know that, right? It's kind of Minnesota nice.
Well, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. but I mean, I'm a great believer in that. I think that that's, you know, sort of the way we're all supposed to be. But it is true. When you get bad facts, it can color a judge and a judge's view of a case. And we always want to be sensitive to those types of things.
Joe, Cheryl from St. Paul called and said, why do so many of these cases keep repeating? If the court has ruled on, for example, student-led prayer, why are more cases being brought to the courts?
Well, you know, there's a few reasons for that. Sometimes you're hearing the stories and they're different states. Occasionally one state court rules, but another state high court rules differently. If they're in the federal court, the problem is lawyers are so good at splitting hairs, and I say this respectfully about my own profession, but sometimes I look at the arguments, you can sort of understand, you know, why, you know, the old Shakespearean sentiment about, you know, first thing will kill all the lawyers, but the, you know, and actually, I'm kidding, of course, I believe it's a noble profession, it can be misused like anything, but what happens is lawyers always try to make distinctions. So when the Supreme Court answers one question, unless a case is what we call on all fours, meaning it's sort of hits that exactly, lawyers will look for ways to distinguish it. Well, what was the heart of the court's reasoning? One side will say it was this. Another side will say no, it was that. So, and sometimes the court wants that. Sometimes the court wants to leave a little play in the joints, and it may be that one appeals court federal appeals court will think it means this, and another will think it means that. And the Supreme Court will not always step in and resolve every difference between the courts. Where they're profound and there's very different outcomes, that makes it more likely that the Supreme Court will step in and try to resolve it. But there's always, there's frequently play in the joints.
Joe, what would you say, you know, maybe to a family or a business or individual that feels threatened or restricted? Are there some maybe a standard approach that we should take? Maybe our kids are affected in school, or is something in the workplace? Or are there some general rules?
Well, you know, my first general rule, you know, as a follower of Jesus Christ would be that first and foremost we serve God. And look, we know that Romans chapter 13 tells us we're to be subject to civil authorities. We understand that. I think everybody, though, has to make occasionally, you know, conscience decisions that if there are things that call us to disobey what we believe God requires of us, we have to act accordingly. And, you know, I'll just say there may be times that we make sacrifices. It may be that we're not going to win every case. So it is important that individuals use their conscience and decide where they're going to, you know, draw lines on occasions. But, you know, I think we have to be guided by that. And a second thing I would point out is that where somebody has a religious belief and a religious mission, in general, it's important that you make that known. You don't have to parade it and beat people over the head. But if you have some sort of a religious belief that motivates what you do, very often that belief will end up protecting you. If, for example, if there's a religious nonprofit, take a religious nonprofit like World Vision. World Vision gets government contracts. It provides its wonderful services to Christians and non-Christians. It fights AIDS. It drills wells. It fights diseases. I believe it's the largest nonprofit in the world. Yet it's a distinctly Christian nonprofit. If you look at their paperwork, World Vision is very clear. They say, we do these things for everyone as an expression, as the outshowing of God's love and what we believe the gospel of Jesus Christ asks us to do. And because of that, when World Vision was sued by some employees who let employees go because they no longer believed in some essentials of the faith and disagreed with the Christian mission of World Vision, when these employees were fired, they sued and they said that violates the anti-discrimination laws. You can't fire us on the basis of religion. And it was the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, which, if you know, people who know the courts or who follow these things know, that's a sort of a court that's far to the left. It's the most overturned federal appeals court, you know, at the Supreme Court. World Vision won, and they won because religious organizations are exempt from the anti-discrimination laws. The courts understand if you have beliefs, you have to be allowed to hire people who agree with your beliefs in order to fulfill your world mission. It's just common sense. You know, we use examples like, look, are you going to tell a yeshiva you have to hire Muslims to teach the Torah? Hmm. Are you going to tell a Catholic school you have to hire Protestants to explain papal infallibility? And the reason World Vision won was because they did not hide their religious beliefs. They served everyone, but they were clear about the reason they did it.
Joe, we need to wrap up. Our time is getting away from us. I want to remind listeners, it's alliancedefendingfreedom.org. And if you want to be part of the Religious Freedom Forum in St. Paul on Thursday, go to mnreligiousfreedom.org. We'll have a link up on our website for both of those as well. You've been listening to Connecting Faith.